Well, it was a long and winding road, but Michelle and Bobby have their three sons. Here's how they got them. Hi, I'm Mark Mellinger, and it's good to have you with us. This is the Embryo Adoption Podcast brought to you by the National Embryo Donation Center. You can find out more about us by going to embryodonation.org. Again, that's embryodonation.org. I'm the Marketing and Development Director at the NEDC. Michelle and Bobby, as you can see, if you're watching on video, are with me. They are with their newest son, NEDC embryo adoption baby, Grayson, who just looks like he's losing his passy. It's okay. He's still pretending he's nursing in his dreams. Wouldn't it be nice to be a baby again? It is so good to have you guys here. And you've got a really interesting journey. And I want to go way back before your embryo adoption journey. I mean, talk about your pre-embryo adoption infertility journey and how you had your oldest. I should mention that you have three sons. You have Lathan, who's seven. You have Alex, who's two. You have Grayson, who's only a couple months old. So talk about pre-embryo adoption infertility, how you eventually had Lathan.
Yeah, so we had gotten married February 2011, and I had wanted to wait a little bit to have kids. But then after a couple of years, we were like, well, maybe we should figure out why we're not having kids because we didn't know why we weren't. We weren't necessarily trying, but we weren't not trying. And so we ended up going to the doctor and finding out that we both had some difficulties. So we were supposed to do IUI, and then they said that that wasn't an option for us.
Yeah, our physician, after looking at our results, he just kind of cut to the chase and he said, really, IVF is your best option. And then after discussion and prayer, we decided to go that route.
And then with Lathan, he was miraculously, we call
Miraculously.
him our little embryo that could, because he's the only one that we had. And the doctor said, there's no way this is going to work. And then we had him.
So
So.
stop there for just a second. So you did IVF and you only wound up with one viable embryo, right?
Yes.
Wow. What were your thoughts going into this, each of you?
Well, I was praying that it would split and be twins.
I think for me, I initially was in disbelief, like, wow, God, is this how we're gonna have to try to have a family? And I just wanted to rely on prayer. And but after hearing about one embryo, I was really fearful. I didn't know if it would work. And so we were super ecstatic when it did. Lathan really is our miracle baby in that regard. Yeah.
Well, he is, and he's a great kid. He's been here at the NEDC, so we've met him in person, seen lots of pictures, and so you have Lathan there, your miracle baby. Did you think at that point that you were done with IVF? I mean, the chances were so slim, according to your doctor, and yet they worked the first time. I mean, what were your thoughts after that? Like you said, Michelle, you wanted twins. Bobby, I don't know what you thought. Where were each of your thoughts?
Well, that was actually where we kind of had a little division. I wanted to do IVF again, and he was scared to, rightfully so. And so we actually did go down that path again, and it didn't work. And so we gave away all of our stuff, and I had mentioned adoption at one point, but we didn't feel like traditional adoption at the time was right for us. And so we gave away all of Lathan's baby clothes and kind of just decided that we would have an only child. And then we went to a different doctor about a year later. He told us the same thing, like, don't do IVF, it's not going to work. And so we prayed about it. And on the way home, we actually stopped at an adoption agency. And
yeah,
it was kind of funny. It was like, do you want to just stop at this adoption agency that we see off the highway?
Sure, let's see what it's about.
And so we did, and we got some information. And then when we were looking into adoption, we actually signed up with Hope's Promise, and they're an amazing adoption agency in Castle Rock. And we were online with them for a few months, and then we went to I don't know if you remember this, but we went to an adoption picnic.
Yes.
And we met people there that had been waiting 3 months, and then we met people there that had been waiting 3 years. And I left there feeling a little bit uneasy because we're older parents, and I was like, what if we have to wait 3 more years? And I think Lathan was 4 at the time, and I was kind of kicking myself, like, we should have done this sooner. And I ended up going like a week later on a trip by myself, and I was flying to Florida for a conference, and I was on Hope's Promise website, and they, where we were waiting to traditionally adopt, and they had a link for embryo adoption. And so that was actually the first time I had heard of embryo adoption. So I was reading it like crazy. And then they were like, turn off your phone. So I sent the link to Bobby, and I was like, look at this, check this out. And then let me know what you think when I land.
And so when I read through it, I was like, what is this? This is amazing. I had never heard about it either. And that was really it was a spark of hope that maybe that was another viable option.
Yeah, so it didn't bother you guys to go from, you know, Bobby and Michelle Toe, parents of children with our own DNA, to parents of children who won't be our DNA. The bottom line is you just wanted to be parents. You didn't want a super long road, which would, you know, a super long wait to get there. So I'm sure it was the sped up timeline that appealed to you when it came to embryo adoption. Was there something about still having the biological connection to the children as well?
Yeah, I think for me, I had a really good pregnancy with Lathan. And so I really liked being pregnant as much as you can like being pregnant. Mm-hmm. And it was really important to me to breastfeed the first year and to have that connection and just to be able to carry the child, to me, just felt really special. Like there's a special aspect of being able to carry your child, and it doesn't matter if it's your DNA or not. It's a blessing that unfortunately a lot of women don't get to experience. And we were just really grateful that it was a path that we would at least get to think about choosing.
Yeah, Bobby, what did you think?
Well, the more we looked into it and read about it, things just sort of aligned, and I felt like God's hand was in it, because Michelle was healthy. She could carry a child. She was completely able to take an embryo and bring it to 9 months. And you know, our issues were not about her carrying a child. Her issues were getting pregnant in the first place. And so it made sense, and it aligned with what her doctor said. Her doctor said, you can have another child and you're all set to go. And it just made sense. And we were like, we were on that timeline. Like, if we're going to go, we should go now, because, you know, we are getting older. We're older parents, and we want to take advantage of it while we're still able. So it just felt right. The dominoes were kind of falling the right way. So.
So explain your journey through the NEDC and what resulted from that. I should mention, by the way, that you live out in the Denver, Colorado area. And of course, here we are in Knoxville, Tennessee. So it there is a little bit of travel involved, but obviously as you look things over, you two made the determination that it would be worth it.
Yeah, that's actually funny also, for various reasons, because I called an agency that's local, and at the time they didn't have very many embryos, and they were an agency, great agency, But they were set up where the donors also chose the recipients. And so there was a wait there, and they had so few embryos that they said that it was going to be a long wait. And they actually referred us to you. They said, have you ever heard of the NEDC? And we said, no. And they actually sent us the information about you. And then I'm from Tennessee. So I had actually lived in Knoxville for a couple of years. And so it was really interesting to me that that's where you were. And so we really liked the fact that we wanted an open adoption, but we wanted to be able to look and choose the family and then them choose us. And so I really liked how the NEDC was set up, where as a recipient, you got to look through the database, pray over the families, really look at different things, not just health-wise, but just really just pray about, like, looking at these profiles, who might my son or daughter be? And so I really liked being able to look at that and then going to the donors, if it's an open adoption, and saying, hey, is this family good with you? And so I liked how that was set up. And I liked the process. At the time, Kathy was there and she was great. And then Christy's there and she's great. And so it just was a really just not an easy journey, but a journey that the NEDC kind of held our hands with. So I really appreciated that as well, from the caseworkers to the matching coordinators to the nurses, et cetera.
Yes. What was the toughest part about this journey for each of you?
I think you go ahead. I'll see if you say the same thing.
For me, I question myself, you know, can I be a good father to a child that's not genetically mine? Am I ready for another child? And then ultimately, am I ready for two more children? So I had my normal fears and doubts. And it made me much more reluctant, I confess. Michelle was a little bit more solid in her desire to pursue an ADC and have more kids. But it felt right. I think she helped me through this a lot. She's been my foundation. But normal fear, you know, fear of being a father to more kids, and we're older parents too, and that popped into my head. You know, when they're young, I want to be much older than a younger parent. So, but all that doesn't matter now because we have two beautiful children to go with Layton.
The way you said that was quite interesting. I knew you meant you have three beautiful children, but you had two from NEDC who to go with Lathan. I got what you mean. You know, I want to camp out before I go back to Michelle. I want to camp out on that for a second, Bobby. I mean, I think you made a really good point. I mean, I've been here for 6 years now, so I've met hundreds of couples going through this. And what you described is not unusual. It does seem like often it is the woman who's more driving the train on this, if I could put it that way, and the husband has to be brought along. He needs a little more time. It's nothing bad. What would you say to other potential embryo adoption dads out there who are in your shoes, or at least where you were a few years ago on this?
Oh, that's a really good question. I guess if I had to summarize, it's okay to feel the fear. It's okay to feel the reluctance. But I just really had an open mind to it. I really wanted to listen and keep an open heart to it. And then prayer. Because ultimately, it kind of came down to, I was no, I don't want to do this. to finally, it really is God's will. If God really means for us to have another child, then we will have another child. And then he will provide, he will equip us with what we need in each other to raise these children properly. That's really, really what it boiled down to. Because I was really, I was not on board. And in particular for Grace and this last one, I confess I was really, really scared. but after thinking about it, there was really good reasons. We didn't want to split up the brothers because Alex and Grayson are genetically related. It just didn't make any sense. And the gift of life is so precious now. And finally, I just trust in you, God. My fears are kind of, they'll be taken care of one way or another. You'll let us know. So.
Faith is such a part of this journey. So many of our couples are people of faith, and certainly you guys would be in that category. So talk about it from your perspective, Michelle. I think it's good for the wives out there to hear. How do you go through this when your husband is a little bit hesitant, but you explore the process and you give him room without being manipulative, if I can put it this way, that way.
I don't know how you can guarantee that I wasn't. But having said that, I think for women, it's like, there is this, for me at least, and I feel like talking to other embryo adoption moms, there's this sense of like, what if I'm like getting my husband on board for this and then like it doesn't work? And, you know, we did a transfer and it didn't work. And so then it's like, okay, now I have to deal with the drugs and the emotions and everything behind it, the finances and the loss. And then I still have to make sure that my husband's on board to do it again. And so I think for us, the second time it worked, and we were so thankful, but because we're older, my OB had kind of said, this is probably it. So for us, we thought we were just going to have Alex and be done. And then my OB was like, well, that went so well, like you could think about having another one. And so then it was really like praying, like, do I actually want this? Like, is this something that I want too? And so he and I really, I mean, we really went back and forth with Grayson. And I feel like, yeah, as a wife, as the one carrying the baby, as the one going through all of this, I felt like I was kind of pulling him along, like, can we do this? And then ultimately he did want to do it. And then funny enough, like Grayson was my easiest pregnancy. I feel like God was just laughing, like, I'm going to give you a little break here. And so it's not just the physical journey of like carrying a child that's not biologically your own. For me, that wasn't really an issue. It was more like the emotional journey of, is this going to work? And if it works, are we ready? And if it doesn't work, are we ready? And just being able to deal with the consequences and the blessings of both. I mean, because it hurts when it doesn't work. And when it does, it's also scary because we're like, okay, we've got three boys now. Like, what does this look like at 44 and 49?
And also, because we had gone through the IVF process personally, we knew that there was always this possibility that if you put in an embryo, it could split.
Yeah.
And then you're not just getting one, you're getting twins or you're getting triplets.
Yeah. So the first one, we wanted it to split. And the third one, we were like, please God, don't split. Yes. Even my OB, I was like, okay, we're praying this one didn't split. And he's like, yeah, I'm due for twins and you're not the one I'm wanting to have them.
Yeah. And like I said, our the context of our situation was unique also because, like we said, we had genetic siblings that we were deciding on. You know, were we gonna use both and have and keep them together if both came to, if God was willing, or were we gonna give them back into to NEDC for the for another prospective family? And so that's, you know, that was a legitimate point of discussion, you know, and ultimately we decided to keep. So
and interestingly enough, we have enough of an open adoption that we went, I actually went back and forth with the donor and I was like, we don't think we're going to do this. And she was so gracious and so kind. And then I came back and said, I think we're going to do this. And she was like, oh, I'm so happy you're going to do it. Like, I'm so glad that you're going to keep them together. And she was so grateful.
I just apologize. She had to have that conversation like six times because I kept wavering. No, I don't want to do it. So she had to have that conversation with the
kind of neat to be able to have that experience, to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Have you met the donor family?
We have not. So we haven't met, but we are Facebook friends and email friends and that kind of thing.
How is that relationship? That's something so many people ask about. And of course, you can do open or closed through the NEDC, but I think it's always a good window into the process.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I feel like this is also more common. The donor mom and I stay in touch much less than the donor dads. So I'm not even sure that the donor dads have talked to each other. I feel like that is also what I see happen a lot. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's a woman's touch or I'm not sure, but
probably.
Yeah, but I think for both of us, it was actually, I don't want to speak for her, but I feel like it was hard for both of us at first, like after having Alex, that sense of, you know, he has genetic family in a different state and how is she feeling and how am I feeling? And it was I'm so thankful for this. And also I don't even want to say a loss. I don't think that's the right word, but a sense of how is she doing? And then knowing who I am and there's a little bit of sense of, for me, of like, is she going to approve of the way I raise these kids? And as time went on, it's not been anything like that. It's just been like a chatting of, just how's your life and how's our life? And Alex is so funny. And a lot of times she'll talk about her kids and be like, so-and-so did this. I don't want to give away her name. Sure. So-and-so did this. And that looks just like Alex. Or I showed my husband a picture of Alex and, you know, he said that he thought that it was their other little boy and they made a big joke about it. And she loves seeing pictures. And then for her, it's really fun to see pictures of their kids. And when Grayson was born, I reached out to her before I announced it to anybody and just sent her a message and said, this one's got dark hair. Like, who does he look like? And so we talked through that and she just was so gracious and so kind. And I don't really know how to explain it for us because we haven't met. So there is that dynamic. Like I think open adoption can go from you send an update once a year to you go on vacation together. Yeah.
You don't have to meet
all the time.
That's a good misconception to clear up. A lot of people think, well, you have to get together in person. You have to do vacation together. No, you don't have to. You work out in your open donation agreement what your level of contact's going to be.
Yeah. And I really value that. Like I like being able to be in touch. But for us, I see other people who go on vacation and I'm like, whoa, I'm not sure I'm there yet.
Sure.
And I think that it's, I think personally that open is the way to go, but I'm biased just because I think you can have so many levels and those levels can change and grow as time goes on. And certainly if our boys ever ask about them, I would love to tell them more. We actually read Alex one of the books the other day, but Lathan was asking a lot of questions and it got to where it was like a funny thing in a kid way. It was like a, you know, a mixing the cupcake book. I forgot what that's called.
I know which one you're talking about.
He's like, Mom, did you have a cupcake oven in you?
You put me in the oven? What?
Yeah. So I was like, maybe this like isn't working.
Well, yeah. He'll get to a point where he can understand it a little better. Yeah.
I feel like I babbled a little bit about the open adoption, and I think it's because it is so all over the board and there's so many emotions and thoughts behind it. So
and it's nice now with Facebook, we are able to kind of stay in contact through that social media platform. And it makes contact daily, or it could be, it's very flexible.
You can look as much or as little as you want.
You can look as much or as little as you want. So it's very flexible.
Yeah.
I remember when you and the boys were here a few months ago, and Lathan is quite the little football aficionado. I mean, he knows about the Denver Broncos and can, you know, he probably should be a football historian or something when he grows up. So a lot of fun, you know, seeing him and the interaction. So talk about what your house is like now. And I also, you know, I grew up with two brothers. So I grew up in a house of three boys, and those are good memories. We certainly caused our parents, my brothers did, a lot of heartache, not me, but and a lot of consternation and mischief. So I know what it can be like in a house with three boys. Yours are still young. What's it like these days?
It's loud.
It's loud. It's wild. We joke around that Alex is our wild child, and we don't know if it's because he's two or in the middle, but he's always been wilder than Lathan was. So we're hoping that maybe this one will be a little calmer. Alex is the one who always scares us. Like if you hear a boom, what did he break? What happened? Who's hurt?
Let me see. The pantry is always open. The refrigerator is always empty. There's toys all over the place. There's a lot of loud yelling and screaming and laughing and giggling and crying.
Yeah.
But we are very blessed because they truly do love each other.
They do.
You know, love sees no color, no differences in genetic features. Lathan just loves his brother, and Alex loves Lathan, and they dote over Grayson like you will not believe. We have to tell them to back off, because if not, they would like
Alex will smother him.
But he's still pretty little, right?
He likes to be in his space. He's cute though. Alex likes to play with his nose, and I think Alex and Grayson's nose is like the feature that they look exactly alike. So I'm like, I wonder if he looks at that nose and is like, it's like my nose. So it's cute. So yeah, they 95% of the time they get along, with Lathan and Alex. Sometimes they'll bicker, and then I'll look at Lathan and be like, you're seven, like, come on. And he laughs and he's like, okay, Mom. So right now we're lucky. He's too little of a baby to get in the midst of all that fighting.
But our household is probably what you remember in yours. It's just a lot of love, a lot of fun, a lot of just a lot of noise, and
a lot of spills,
but but we are very, very grateful. Like I look at Grayson and Alex in particular, because you know their parents, their genetic parents gave them a chance by donating them to NADC, and then we gave them a chance for actual life by choosing them, and God saw fit to bring them into this world for us. So
amen. Yeah, he's the one in charge of it all.
Yes.
Yeah. and he's good. There are a few earthly satisfactions that he gives us that are anywhere close to the blessing that family life is, right? I mean, how deeply satisfying. And if somebody had told you this back in 2013, this is what your lives would look like, you may not have believed it, right?
I'd believe that.
The irony, though, is that Lathan still wants a sister.
So we're praying for him to have a daughter one day. Okay, Kevin is closed.
I think that that's an excellent way to handle that prayer request. Yes. I love it. Well, Bobby and Michelle Toe have been my guests, and Grayson, who's been just the perfect little angel, which is great. we are so thankful to you too, and we love your family, and are so glad that you're a part of the larger NEDC family. And if you've been listening, thanks for coming along. You want to find out more about embryo adoption, you can do that by going to the NEDC website at embryodonation.org. Again, that is embryodonation.org. I'm Mark Bellinger. This has been the Embryo Adoption Podcast.